It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. In 1993, the late comedian, sketch comedy actor, and Madison native Chris Farley burst onto the stage of Saturday Night Live as motivational speaker Matt Foley, giving one of the most famous sketch comedy performances in SNL's 50-year history.
Well, I'm here to tell you that you're probably going to find out as you go out there that you're not going to amount to jack squat. You're going to end up eating a steady diet of government cheese and living in a van down by the river.
Now a new graphic novel from Chris's brother, Kevin Farley, is a flashback to their youthful coming-of-age comedy adventures.
From their boyhood, their boyhood skits at Red Arrow Camp at the Northwoods to sets in the converted garage of Arc Improv Theater in Madison.
The graphic novel is called Growing Up Farley. The book's illustrator, Ryan Dunleavy, says he could relate in many ways to the panels he drew.
And I just felt like I was acting out, reacting with Kevin's stories. I was reacting stories and things I did with my brother at the same age, just with a pencil rather than up on a stage.
Chris Farley died of a drug overdose in 1997, but Farley, the big guy with the big personality on SNL, was once a Wisconsin kid doing pranks with his brother Kevin.
We got to see Chris before he became famous, before me and the rest of the world knew about him. I hope people can see, just find something of themselves in the book, kind of the way I did when I was making it.
Dunleavy's illustrations are paired with words by comedian and actor Kevin Farley. I asked Kevin how he chose what stories to share from his childhood and the role his father had in getting the Farleys into the world of comedy.
I wanted to give people a glimpse of, you know, what inspired me and how it all came to be, you know, and it really came to be during my childhood, and it developed during that time. So I wanted to give people sort of an inside scoop on what happened when we were growing up.
I want to start with your dad, and we get glimpses of who he is, selling asphalt. What impact did he make on your comedy?
A lot, you know, pretty much everything. He had sort of a sometimes dry sense of humor. But when he'd laugh really hard. You know, he was inspired by a lot of the Mel Brooks's comedies, and really the only movies my dad would let everyone watch are comedies. So we were flooded with Caddyshack and Carol Burnett Show and basically those kinds of comedies like Saturday Night Live. And yeah, we were always watching movies. We watched them over and over again. You know, we had a VHS player and we could watch them over and over again. So I think we watched Caddyshack over 1,000 times. I don't know. Yeah. And so that's kind of where the inspiration came. He was a guy that really loved comedy. We didn't really watch anything else growing up. We never talked about anything else. We always talked about who was the funniest.
There's the big block lettering with those like refrigerator magnet look to the letters. And it says, I have never laughed so hard as when I was laughing with my brother. Can you describe how close the two of you were, the sibling bond of the Farleys?
He and I we're in school together all the way. In school, we went to high school, we went to college together, and we played rugby together, we played football together, and we worked for my father. And then, you know, he went to Second City and I went to Second City. So we were kind of attached to the hip pretty much all of our lives. When, you know, in Wisconsin, you know, when we couldn't go outside because it was too cold, so we stayed inside, and there was always a competition, you know, who could make each other laugh the most. And he usually won those competitions because he one-upped everybody, you know. We would dare somebody to do something, and he'd always do it.
That's what I found so interesting that I didn't know. The stories of you and Chris, you know, Chris being so competitive. And I'm wondering, did that drive, did that fire in the belly, you know, of wanting to be the best at something, did that come through in Chris's comedy work?
Oh, yeah. You know, he thrived on that where, and that was kind of growing up. We would have Monopoly games or basketball or any kind of athletics, anything but academics, really. We didn't really care about academics. But I think he wanted to be a pro football player for a little while. And then when he found comedy, he wanted to be the best. He always wanted to be the funniest guy in the room.
In the book, you talk about Red Arrow Camp in northern Wisconsin, going there in the summers. What role did summer camp have in you both getting your first taste of performing for a crowd?
Yeah, well, we would always go up to summer camp when we were little. You know, pretty much every year we'd go during the summer. Red Arrow always had like a play at the end of the summer, and everybody in the camp had a little something to do there. I was mostly in the choir, but Chris always had a lead role. And he sang songs like Teddy Bear by Elvis, and he really killed in that one. And he sang all different songs, and he was always the hit of the play. So we kind of knew there was something there at that point, you know.
So when he starts performing as Matt Foley, that abrasive and clumsy motivational speaker, I'm wondering what you thought of watching that, what you saw in him as he came to life in those performances.
Well, yeah, we had just discussed that a lot, and we had a lot of football coaches that were kind of loud and boisterous, and they were hilarious because of the way they spoke, you know, and the coach would always say, "Do me a favor, don't think, do," and that kind of thing. Those kind of sayings always resonated with Chris, like, if you're going to make a mistake, make an aggressive mistake. And that he loved the football coach's sayings, you know. And then a lot of it was mixed in with my father and his boisterous kind of voice. So it was a combination of our football coaches and my dad.
You two moved out of Madison in early adulthood. And how did your relationship with Madison, even with Wisconsin, change as you became an adult and as you went off in Chicago, big cities, and leaving Wisconsin behind in some respects?
Oh, it's kind of sad. You know, I love Wisconsin. I always look at Wisconsin kind of like, remember in The Hobbit, the Shire and the Hobbit? You know?
Yes.
I always think of Wisconsin like that, with a bunch of like hobbits running around with giant feet, just eating cheese and planting food and, you know, just friendly people, you know. And so it was like I felt a little bit like Bilbo Baggins leaving the Shire. you always wish you could go back and just eat cheese and watch the cows, you know.
I appreciate how this graphic novel really focuses on special relationships and the things that the behind the scenes things we just don't see between brothers and your dad, and we don't see the struggles that are often focused on with food or alcohol, the drugs. And I'm wondering, you know, do we shy away sometimes from the good points and the relationships that seem to get, you know, short shrift?
Yeah, I mean, my brother died a very public death, and everybody knows how he died, and we talk about that a lot. But I always wanted to show people, you know, the other side of him, which you know, was a pretty shy guy, and a lot of times very insecure. And my father also had an illness. He was overweight, and we all had a problem with food. I still do, you know, and alcohol. But, you know, you have to address those issues. And, you know, since then, we've all looked at ourselves. You know, I've looked at myself, and I've sobered up. And so I look at that as something that's, you know, was in the family. And was, you know, something we all had to address, you know. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really know what alcoholism was, you know, when I was growing up. But then I figured it out pretty quick after Chris died, you know. Mm. So I wanted to just point, you know, the good things, and because there's so many times people focus on the troubles Chris had and my father had, but, you know, I wanted to, there was also a lot of good times too, you know.
I love the words at the end of the graphic novel, your dad saying to be polite, look presentable, and be open to everyone with civic mindedness. Did you and Chris grow into these values, or how do you hold that guidance now inside of you?
Well, the one thing he wanted to impress with his boys is to be a gentleman. Hmm. And that meant, you know, have some manners, even though didn't seem like Chris, but he would have manners sometimes. And he always wanted to his boys to look decent, you know, wear a blazer, and, you know, khaki pants or gray pants. And he wanted everybody to be a gentleman and always listen and have your manners when you're talking to people. Don't be a jerk to people. And he insisted on that. He didn't like bullies, and he didn't like people that were too showy. You know, he wanted you to be like any kind of Wisconsin dad, sort of grounded in Midwest values, you know, sort of.
It makes me think about the scene in the graphic novel where you and Chris, you're in the family car, you're riffing about someone who appears to be homeless, and your dad screeching to a stop and just has had enough, saying the worst thing you can do is diminish someone because it diminishes all of us. What was that moment like for you two?
Well, we were Catholic. It was very important to be Catholic and to be religious in our house. We all were altar boys, and it was very important for my dad to send everybody to Catholic school. And he really drilled into us the importance of Catholicism and Christianity. And so if we veered along, you know, out of that world, he'd get very angry, and he didn't like that.
Considering the Catholicism, you end with the clown's prayer. And I understand Chris kept that with him, that prayer. Can you reflect on that, what the clown's prayer means to you now?
Yeah, there was a priest in Marquette named Father Naus, and he was a clown in his, like, he was an actual clown that, I don't know if he worked for the circus or he'd do certainly appearances and stuff. A very gentle, nice man, and he was a great priest that was in Marquette, and he had that. I don't know if he wrote it, but he introduced Chris to that prayer, and it always, since Chris was, you know, inspired to go into comedy after college, he always kept that with him, and I always remembered that prayer. So that kept him also grounded, you know, into Christian values.
I've been thinking about you in the passage of time with SNL celebrating 50 years and such a big celebration with that, and it being more than 25 years since Chris died. As you look back at so many years and watch what SNL has gone through with talent, how do you hold that in you? What do you think about?
Oh, I think about, I watched the 50th, and I thought it's just great memories. I remember being around. I'd go visit, and I'd see her go around 8H and see all the people I admired. And it was just an electric place to be. And so it was nice to watch, you know, but it's also bittersweet because of that was such a nice period in Chris's life. And Chris had such a huge part of it. So it was it's very meaningful.
Well, Kevin, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And I love Wisconsin, and it's a pleasure very much.
Kevin Farley is a comedian and writer. He's the author of Growing Up Farley. It's a graphic novel that is a glimpse into Chris and Kevin's comedy adventures growing up in Madison. Ryan Dunleavy is a comic book artist in New York. He illustrated this book.
Hey, buddy, last moved on, but you still bring us so much joy. Make my kids laugh with your YouTube clips, oh, Tommy boy. You're a legend like you wanted, but I still wish you were here with me. And we were getting on a plane to go shoot Grown Ups 3. Yeah, life ain't the same without you, boy. And that's what I'm singing about. I'm singing about my boy Chris Farley.